stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, and welcome to the quarterly All-EN call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Rob Pfaff. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us today on this quarterly All-EN call. It's great to be with you again after my 6 months away. As some of you may know, I was detailed signee to the House Ways and Means Social Security Subcommittee, where I spent a lot of time going through policies that I was completely unfamiliar with and learn aspects of the agency that I did not have any comprehension of previously. It was a great experience, very challenging, and it's great to be back here with my colleagues and with you as well. We have a packed agenda today, so I'm not going to take a whole lot of time. I just want to go over a couple of things relative to SSA. As you probably are aware, we still do not have a commissioner nominee. Right now, Nancy Berryhill is still serving as our acting commissioner. In terms of organizationally, you may be aware, but if for those of you who are not, Mark Wachowski is the appointed deputy commissioner for the Office of Retirement and Disability Programs, and our organization in ORDES falls under his domain. So Mark has been with us for several months. Kate Benn is still our associate commissioner, and I'm still serving in the same capacity as I previously did with my counterpart, Susan Wilski, working on the research and demonstration side. So as I indicated previously, we have a great agenda. We're going to talk about some exciting stuff. We have EN suitability, very critical to all of you. And so I would encourage you to pay very close attention to that presentation. We have a great promoting opportunity demonstration by our folks here, which I think you'll find of interest. And then, of course, we have our colleagues from the Maryland Doors who are going to present and full circle in terms of effective practices. We have and our own internal folks, our Maximus team talking about outreach. Kara's going to talk about some important EN reminders, and Anna's going to cover us at the end, and then we'll have questions. So without further ado, I'm going to turn over the agenda to our presenters from SSA, who are Rosita Acevedo and Vernon Collins, and they will talk to you now about EN suitability. So go ahead, please.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. Good afternoon, everybody. Once again, I am Vernon Collins, and we do have Rosita Acevedo here. We are both from Security and Suitability, and what we want to do is we're very excited to share a new process with you, one that is all electronic. And for those of you who have been ENs for a while, we hope that you will find this new way a lot better than what we have in the past as far as with mailings and everything. So I'm just going to go over the new process, and I'll point out the differences from how we currently have done things to how we're going to do things now. So in the past, up front, in order to get the process started, the POC from each EN would fax us in an EQIP applicant listing, and then they would wait for the EQIP invite. So that is still how we're going to do things, but included now, you will also submit the forms that we require. So we're going to get the OF-306, which is the Declaration for Federal Employment. We'll get the Fair Credit Reporting Act form, and then any work authorization for anybody who was born out of the country. So those three documents, which you normally would have mailed in at a later time, those will be submitted up front to us along with the EQIP applicant listing. So the next step will remain the same. You will wait until you get the EQIP invitation by email, and then you would have each applicant complete the EQIP application. Then after that is when we want to have the fingerprints taken, but now we have an electronic option where usually you would have the hard copies, you would go somewhere, get those done. You now have the ability to get those taken electronically. So in our new guide that we have, our new process document, We have all these forms embedded in the document, and we also have the electronic fingerprinting, all the information also embedded in the document. And it's really simple. Just each applicant would go to the website, and they can find a location closest to them, whether if they wanted to make it closer to where they work or closer to where they live, they could. There's many of these locations around, and they would schedule an appointment so that it wouldn't take up a huge chunk of their day. So it only takes about 5 minutes once you arrive for your appointment to be electronically fingerprinted, and then we actually can access those prints, usually within a half hour after you have finished. So we're cutting a whole lot of time out as far as the mail-ins, and the E-ins are also going to save money as well because they're not going to have to pay to mail these packages to us. So by getting everything, all the forms up front, and then when you have the applicant complete EQIP, it's going to be important that you follow these steps. When I say these steps, I mean as far as the having the EQIP completed and the fingerprints completed. The EQIP has to be completed before the individual makes their fingerprint appointment to get fingerprinted. And the reason we ask that you do it this way is because the fingerprints are going to trigger us that we have everything already on file for you. So we don't want you to get fingerprinted, and then when we pull the fingerprints, we realize, oh, this person hasn't done EQIP yet, because we can't do anything with it. So that's why it's very important that the EQIP is completed first, and then the electronic fingerprints are taken. So at that point in time, we will have everything we need to process without any mail being sent. We do have a new email box, because we used to do everything by fax, but we like to have a record of it, and it's also helpful for the ENs as well. But we do have a suitability mailbox. I'll tell you what the mailbox name is now, but there'll also be, we'll send out documentation that'll have this located. But our email mailbox name is DCHR. So it's David Charlie Harry Robert dot OPE. That's Oscar Paul Edward dot suitability at ssa.gov. So in lieu of faxing, we really recommend that you email us the EQIP applicant listings, the OF-306, the fair credit, and work authorization if applicable, with a copy to the enservice at ssa.gov email. So what this going to do is this will allow the enservice team, who for many years have kind of been in the dark about what was submitted and when it was submitted. So this way, everybody will be on the same page about, you know, when a document or when a request was made and exactly when it was made. Okay? So what we'll do is we'll take those forms. If there is anything incomplete, we will return them and let you know what is incomplete and what needs to be completed before we process everything. Also, along with the electronic fingerprinting, we found that over the years, depending upon which area folks lived in, fingerprinting charges, what they were being charged, was it differed from region, but I've seen people get charged $50 to get their fingerprints taken, $35. We have a flat fee that we've negotiated with our fingerprint service provider. So it's only going to be $16.50. I knew before we always required two fingerprint cards. So electronically, they're only going to do the one electronic submission, and we'll be able to have that. We won't have to deal with illegible fingerprints as much because the rejection rate is very low. So just to go over the new changes. So we're eliminating anything that you have to mail. You shouldn't have to mail anything to us. So you're now going to submit the EQIP applicant listing up front as you normally did, but you're going to do it by email. And you're also going to include the OF-306, the fair credit, and any work authorization documents for those who were born outside of the U.S. So we will get all those up front. You will get the EQIP applicant listing as you normally – I'm sorry, you will get the EQIP initiation invite email as you normally would. You you will have the applicants complete EQIP, and only after they have completed EQIP will they then go on and get their fingerprints electronically taken. Once they have done that, we have everything we need so we can begin to work on the case right then and there. So that's going to cut out a lot of time in between that we normally had. So it's just important that you include ENService@SSA.gov email up front, just so they also have a record of it as well. And just in case you didn't know, whenever we do get EQIP applicant listings, we will verify every individual that you've submitted to us. So we verify that you gave us the correct Social Security number. We'll verify that the name and place of birth is spelled correctly. And we'll also look to see if they have any investigations on file already with another agency that we can use for reciprocity. Now, in the past, when we have identified those reciprocity candidates, we would reach back out and ask for the OF-306 document, which that will no longer be the case because we will already have it. So anybody who you submit to us that we deem has an appropriate investigation on file, you would just get a letter for them, and you wouldn't get the invite. So that's going to speed up the reciprocity phase of our background as well. Now, we are putting in a time frame limit that we would like to have all this completed since it is all electronic. So now we have 10 days where we'd like to have the applicant both complete EQIP and get electronically fingerprinted after the EQIP invite has gone out. Generally, the EQIP in of itself, signing into the form, probably takes the longest as you have to create golden questions and such, but the form itself is really not that long. It just asks for some employment information, some residence information, and some people who know you well. So completing that form and then, like I said, getting electronically fingerprinted, you can make your appointment sometimes the same day. And again, it only takes 5 minutes once you get there to actually have your fingerprints captured. Once we get the electronic fingerprints and we verify that we have everything else we need, that package goes on to the next phase where we have those that review that package, and they're reviewing it for completeness. So there will be times that, you know, we have to reach back out because the form wasn't completed with all the information that we need. So we may request some additional information. We may reject the form back to have the form completed by the applicant, in which case we would put all the information in the body of the email that we need. We also may request some additional documents, and I do want to go over that briefly. On the OF-306 form, there's 7 questions on that form, but there's a couple of them that we're interested in right now in regards to this conversation. So the federal tax and federal student loan question, where if there's a yes answer, there's certain other information you have to provide just to avoid any delays or so you know up front. More than likely, we're going to come back and request proof of a payment plan if the applicant has stated that a payment plan is in place. And if the applicant does not state that a payment plan is in place, we're going to come and request that they get a payment plan in place before we clear them. So that document as well, we're going to include to you so you'll know what we need submitted to. We want to make the process streamlined as possible. So that question and a couple other questions on those forms, we'll have an OF-306 amendment document in which we'll tell you what you should send with yes answers on those forms just so we can move everything along quickly. After we go through the phase where we verify all the documents and look everything over, we make a determination. Now, we have 3 determinations. We have a suitable determination. That means the applicant is allowed to work. We have an unsuitable determination, which means the applicant is not allowed to work. And we have a pre-screen denied determination. Now, just so you know and we're clear, the pre-screen denial letter means that we need some additional information, and either the applicant did not provide that information within the required time frame, or the applicant needs more time to get that information. So that letter is just really a placeholder to let the EN know, as well as EN service know, that yes, we do have everything we need for this person as far as a final package and being able to work it, but there's still some additional information we need before we can make a determination. So those are the three letters that you'll see from us: suitable, unsuitable, and pre-screen denied. For those made suitable, we then send their information on to OPM, which is the Office of Personnel Management, and they actually conduct the majority of the background check for us. And usually within 2 months to 6 months, we'll get that investigation back from them, and we'll have to adjudicate it. I'm mentioning this to say that our upfront suitable determination is not always final. There are instances where some information will be uncovered by us on the latter end of the process that wasn't available to us up front, and we may have to reverse a determination. So I just wanted to put that out there. It doesn't happen often because we do get a lot of the information up front, but that also is a possibility. A lot of times when we reach out later on for additional information, folks kind of question it because they say, hey, you know, I was already made suitable. So if you read the wording on those suitable letters, it's just a upfront determination, and it's not final until we actually adjudicate it on the back end. So with that being said, that's pretty much our new process in a nutshell. Like I said, again, it's all electronic. No more need to mail anything, no hard copy fingerprints. Some of you on the line have probably already received some documentation on how we're going to go about this. We've actually updated that documentation, so they'll probably blast it out to all the ENs. But one of our one of the new points focuses on the cores. So if you see in the language that you should send your information to the cores, we've actually amended that so that you can just copy EN service, and that will settle that part of it. I think actually in our EQIP applicant listing that we're going to send out, it's an Excel format now. We've already formatted those fields with EN service and the EN service email address. So all you'll have to do is copy them on the email. That's basically it for the new process. Are we opening up to questions?
Oh, Vernon, thank you so much. There's quite a bit of excitement going on in chat room. Leanne, we're going to open up the lines for questions, but before you cue someone else, we're going to have John Milnick. There are some questions from the chat. If you can help us out with those, please.
Hi. Yes, our first question came from Laura Barry. It was actually the most recent, but I believe you just answered this, so I'm just going to read this really quickly. Will you be sending the document explaining this process?
We're actually...
We can send a blast, I guess.
We will find a good means to send that out, either if we're sending it or posting it, so stay tuned for that. We could do both.
Right. And then our next question comes from Pam Reddy. What if we have recently sent out the paperwork for an employee?
Yeah, so I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So for those employees who have submitted the old way, we will handle those the old way. So you can submit those as you normally would. It's just for everybody that you submit under the new process where you also give us our forms up front. They will follow the new process. But anybody that you submitted previously, you can submit. So, for instance, if you submitted an applicant listing and got the EQIP invite, but you have yet to submit the 306, the fair credit, and the fingerprints, you can go ahead and send those to us the normal way or the current way.
All right. And then our next question, we've actually had several different variations of this. Essentially, for those people who are living in rural areas where they might not have easy access to e-fingerprinting, they were wondering if there's any alternative.
Yeah, so even though we highly recommend the electronic process just for speed, We also still do have the hard copy fingerprint option available to those in these situations. So if a fingerprinting service provider is not convenient for you, then yes, you still can submit the hard copy prints. The only change is if your hard copy prints are illegible, we will require new fingerprint cards. So just keep that in mind as we go along. Just to be honest, like a lot of times we get fingerprint cards that applicants took themselves, and you can tell really right off the bat. So for those who don't choose to use the electronic or they can't, just make sure you actually have your fingerprints taken by a licensed or professional, because we will reach out if they are eligible to have them redone.
All right. And then our next question comes from Stacy Clark, who wants to know, how often does an EN have to update fingerprints on file?
That's actually a pretty good question. So right now, once you're cleared with us, we don't have anything in place where you have to update your fingerprints. Should anything come down the pike where, you know, there's a new regulation in place where we need to do reinvestigations, we'll let you all know. But right now, we don't have that in place.
All right. And it looks like we've had two more questions that just popped up in the chat. Susan B. Wants to know, do you have to go to the SSA office for the fingerprinting?
No. So the for the electronic fingerprint, they're going to be, once you go online, there are going to be multiple locations for many of you to choose from. And this is in Puerto Rico and Hawaii as well. So you won't actually go to an SSA office. You'll go to a local, a lot of times it could be a UPS store or maybe a mom and pop shop, but you'll find that there's usually pretty a lot of options available no matter where you are, and you'll set up the appointment and you'll go in there and then have your fingerprints electronically taken.
Okay, great. Thanks, Vernon.
I just have a question for Vernon because yeah. I know people are going to ask us this. You mentioned the 10 days.
Uh-huh.
So you send in the eQuip application and you have 10 days to send in all the other forms electronically. After that point, is the eQuip no good anymore? They would have to go in and refile a new eQuip application?
The eQuip does time out. So we're trying to allow some wiggle room in there. So you do have a little bit more than 10 days, but we would like for, since we have everything else and we sent out the initiation, we would like to move the process along as quickly as possible. So if the applicants, 10 days is really plenty to go in and complete the eQuip application and then have get your fingerprints taken electronically.
Yeah, I just want to reinforce that because we have a lot of people who do the eQuip application and then say, I sent in my stuff 6 months ago, but they never followed through after that. So just to be clear for that, for people, you need to do that, and within 10 days, do the other forms, including the fingerprint cards that are necessary
Correct.
For your clearance to start processing.
Correct. So with the new process, we shouldn't have any of those issues. Because a lot of times people would send in their forms and fingerprints before they sent in the eQuip applicant listing. So once it arrives to our office, there's no record in our system mm-hmm. because we didn't get the eQuip applicant listing up front. So hopefully we will eliminate all of that, especially since everybody will have a record of it by email, both the POC, EN, and us, as we don't delete anything. So we'll all have a record of the submissions by email.
I just want to add, but thank you very much for your presentation, which was excellent. This is Rob speaking. This illustrates how this program is so dependent on other aspects of SSA, other components. And in this case, a lot of the ENs, think that we handle, our component in ORDES, that, since we are responsible for Ticket to Work, that we also handle suitability and all the other things associated. And this is a good opportunity for us to clarify. This is human resources, our deputy commissioner component, which is another component which in, within SSA that you're engaged in doing suitability for all other aspects of Social Security Administration, not just ticket to work.
Not just ticket to work.
So that's an important, important point that I want to make. So it's all within the context and giving folks an understanding of, you know, all the work that you do and how critical this work is to this particular program. But you're doing this for contractors and
nationwide,
thousands and thousands of people not associated with Ticket to Work. So thank you very much. I appreciate the presentation.
Yeah, I ditto that, and lots of great information. We did promise to open up the line for questions, so let's see if we can squeeze a question in. Leanne?
If you'd like to ask a question over the phone line, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And again, it is star 1 to ask a question. And we have had a question queue over the phone lines. Our question comes from Shelley Peckett with Rise.
Hi, Shelley.
Hi. Hi, Vernon.
Hi, Shelley. How you doing?
We've actually talked a couple of times, yep.
I'm
doing well. In fact, that last comment about making sure that we're all aware they cover the whole entire United States and all the other entities and that they're not just for us is probably directed at me. So my question, I'm actually looking at, and I was listening to the process that you were talking about, and you gave the address, the email address for the DC. And when I dissected this, we put several people through now on this new applicant listing, and we were told to send it to our EN specialist. The COCATOR I had to have defined, because in the instructions it's that, and that they then will submit to the DCH.
Yes. So I had mentioned earlier in the call, and I know I said a lot, but that's kind of the language that we're sending out to everybody, but we've met with our EN counterparts. And we have changed it up a little bit. So the new language that you're going to get, instead of sending it to actual core, actual person, you're going to just copy the EN service email address with your submissions.
But also, okay. I think to answer your question is, EN service is not going to submit it to the Office of Suitability. You have to submit it to the Office of Suitability and CC EN service so we are aware of it. But we're not...
And that's different than what... That's different than what I was instructed, so I'm calling for a clarification on that because I specifically was told to send it to our EN specialist, Kendra.
Correct.
Sandra?
Yeah.
Sandra, yeah.
And she wasn't incorrect in that. That's how we started out, but once we talked to our EN counterparts, we've amended that a little bit. So, yes, you will send it directly to us yourself, but you would just copy them so that they're aware as well.
And that's copy EN service.
Correct.
Okay.
Good.
That comment wasn't meant for you. We have no problem trying to get you all squared away.
And we definitely need to get squared away. The fingerprinting remotely, somebody did ask about the rural areas, and one of the things that we discovered was you will sign up like an appointment. They'll send you out a packet. You take it to your local sheriff's office or wherever your fingerprinting is. Then you have those paper copies that you mail back, and the agency will electronic submit them to you guys.
Yes. Okay. And I'm glad you mentioned that because that just recently came up to us. But we can actually make that faster as well. Most of you ENs already, you have our hard copy fingerprints on file, and you can still keep a stash of those for this situation, because if you do go on to field print and there's no place close to have it electronically done, you don't have to wait on them to send you fingerprint cards. You can still use the ones you've been using in the past, and you can skip that step altogether. So, like, if somebody goes on and they don't have a place to go to, instead of having field print mail you the fingerprint cards, you can use the current fingerprint cards you've been using and have the person go get fingerprinted. It's the same thing.
Okay, perfect. And just to let everybody know out there, this new process so far has been working very smoothly.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you for your question, for participating.
Yep.
That's very helpful. What we're going to do is we'll have more questions at the end, but we're going to move on to our next section, which is a presentation from Promoting Opportunity Demonstration. And I will hand it over to John Jones, which is a contracting officer representative with the POD contract. John?
Thank you. This is John Jones, and I'm actually one of two contracting officer representatives. Debbie Engler is the other one on this contract, but she's not going to be on this conference call. So I've also been told that I need to go through my slides fairly quickly because the agenda has gotten packed. So what I'm going to do is run through a quick description of the demonstration. I'm going to tell you how you can be involved in it, and then I'm going to leave you with contact information at the end on the very last slide. So I'm going on to slide 5. Congress asked the Social Security Administration, they actually mandated that we test a 2-for-1 benefit offset, and we're doing it through a demonstration or an experiment, and it's going to last until June of 2021, at least the participation period for beneficiaries. Now POD, like I said, is testing a 2-for-1 offset, and it works like this. If a beneficiary earns more than an earnings threshold, a certain amount of earnings, that earnings level, by the way, is going to, for most beneficiaries, is going to be $850. That's the trial work period threshold. If they work above that and earn more than $850 a month, for every $2 of earnings that they make above that amount, they're going to reduce their benefits by $1. So for every $2, they get a $1 reduction in their benefits. And so they can actually work so much that they actually gradually reduce their benefits to zero. Now, in this, the request from Congress, they had stipulations. For instance, there's another threshold that could be used instead of the $850, and that would be the impairment-related work expenses. If a beneficiary has ROEs that are greater than $850, then that can serve as the threshold of when the benefit offset would kick in. But for most beneficiaries, $850 is what the threshold would typically be. Also, Congress asked us to test a termination aspect or a clause for this demonstration. And part of this demonstration is also a simplification of the DI work incentive rules. For instance, it will not have a trial work period or extended period of eligibility. Now, I'll talk more about that in just a moment. But for now, I'd like to go to slide 6 and just let you know that there's two contractors that are involved in POD. There's Apton Associates, who will be involved in the implementation aspects of the demonstration. Essentially, they will be collecting earnings and ROEs information from participants in the demonstration, and they'll be transferring that information to SSA so that SSA can effectuate the benefit offset for those individuals. And they're also coordinating the counseling services for beneficiaries that are participating in the demonstration, so that would help them navigate the rules of POD and how to use the benefit offset. The other contractor that's in the demonstration is Mathematica Policy Research. Their goal is to, or their responsibility is to recruit beneficiaries into the demonstration, and they're also tasked with evaluating the demonstration. And they'll be providing us with deliverables and documents that is telling us how the evaluation is going, and they'll be submitting that to us throughout the year. I'm moving on to slide 7 now. Now, the plan is that we're going to try to recruit 15,000 SSDI beneficiaries to volunteer into the demonstration. And we have 1 year to recruit these beneficiaries. Now, recruitment has started January 2nd of this year, and it will continue until December of this year, 2018. And the participation period for the beneficiaries, as I said before, after recruitment is done in December, they'll still have until June 2021 to use the offset. Now, here's some more information. This is how we're going to try to evaluate the demonstration. Eligible beneficiaries will be randomly assigned to two treatment groups and one control group. Now, beneficiaries that are assigned to the two treatment groups will be able to use this one-for-two benefit offset, but those in the control group will not. The control group will continue to operate under the normal SSDI program rules. There will be no change for them, but for the beneficiaries in the two treatment groups, like I said, they'll be able to use that one-for-two offset, but they differ in one aspect, that one of the treatment groups will be testing a termination clause. That is, if a beneficiary in that treatment group earns enough under the benefit offset to reduce their benefits all the way down to zero, and they remain in that state for 12 consecutive months, then the beneficiary's eligibility for DI benefits will be terminated. And if they're terminated, the beneficiary still can continue to receive Medicare for 93 months unless they're medically improved. Currently, we have 124 beneficiaries enrolled in POD. My slide says 110, but that number is changing every day as more beneficiaries are volunteering. So I'm going on to slide 8 now. And like I said, POD participants will be randomly assigned to these three groups, and they're going to be randomly assigned equal amounts, equal numbers. However, I have to emphasize that POD is a voluntary program. Beneficiaries do not have to volunteer. It is not mandatory. We've had beneficiaries that call into our 1-800 number asking if it's a mandatory program, and I think they're confused. It is not mandatory. We're advertising it as voluntary, but the message is not getting out to all the beneficiaries. So it is not mandatory. It's a voluntary program. Now, the eligibility criteria is important to discuss because not every beneficiary can enroll. We want beneficiaries who are primary workers between the age of 20 and 62. Essentially, we don't want children, and we don't want people who are going to retire while they're in the demonstration. But beneficiaries who are receiving DI-only benefits or receiving DI or SSI benefits together concurrently, they are eligible for the participation into the demonstration. However, we do not want duly entitled DI beneficiaries. That is, we don't want someone in the demonstration who is receiving DI benefits off of somebody else's benefit record. For example, a parent could be a primary working beneficiary receiving DI benefits on their own, but they may have a child who is also receiving DI benefits on their own record, but also receiving benefits from the parent's record, too. That would be a duly entitled beneficiary. We don't want the child in the demonstration. We want the parent in the demonstration. So that's why we're saying no dual entitlements. Also, the beneficiaries cannot have an open case review in the process. They just can't have that open. And if they do have one that was open and it was shut, they cannot have a decision of determination dated at a time when they would be in the demonstration. So they will not be eligible. And anyone that's trying to regain eligibility for DI benefits through expedited reinstatement, they will have to have a recorded positive decision made before they can be eligible for the demonstration. So in other words, we want current beneficiaries who are receiving benefits before they're actually enrolled in the demonstration. Also, we are not going to allow beneficiaries in who have participated in a previous demonstration or current demonstration that we've conducted. All right, so now moving on to slide 9. This is a slide that tells how you can be involved in the demonstration. Frankly, we see you all, the ENs, as critical stakeholders who hold the key to success of this demonstration. Beneficiaries are naturally skeptical upon first hearing about POD, and as a result, they are typically apprehensive about volunteering. However, our beneficiaries know you as trusted sources of information. And so if they hear about POD from you, then they'll, through your discussions with them, it would reinforce the legitimacy of POD. We don't want beneficiaries to think that it's a scam, which we've had reports of some people telling the beneficiaries that, and I think it's just because they didn't understand that POD is a legitimate demonstration. So if you could tell them that that POD is legitimate, I think that goes a long way to help us recruit. Also, if you know beneficiaries who could possibly benefit from enrolling in the demonstration, you can contact Mathematica Policy Research and ask for a packet for that beneficiary, or if you want, you could take them and show them the beneficiary. You could show them the POD website. I'm not going to list the red site here. It's listed on the screen, but I also have this information on the very last slide of this presentation. So we'll leave that up so you can get the information there. So we also have a 1-800 number that you could call if you wanted to get more information. Or you could just provide that to the beneficiary, and the beneficiary could call that number and get more information about POD. Now, for you all, in preparation for this indirect outreach that we're calling it, Mathematica Policy Research is conducting webinars. We've already had one in November, but the newest updated webinar is going to be March 22nd between 2 and 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And Mathematica is going to be sending out emails with the invitation attached, so please keep your eyes out for that email. And then remember that it's the 22nd at 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, so now I'm moving on to slide 10. This is the slide that shows our recruitment areas. Now, there's 8 states that are going to be involved in this demonstration. Beneficiaries living in those 8 states are the ones that are going to be eligible for it. Beneficiaries outside those areas cannot be recruited. However, not all of the states will be recruited. There's 3 states that are going to be, we'll recruit from the entire state, but for the remaining 5, we're only going to be recruiting from specific counties, and the counties are listed on the screen on the slide 10. So without further ado, I'd like to advance to slide 11, and in slide 11, this is the contact information. It's probably the most important slide for you. It has the email for Mathematica Policy Research, where you can ask them for packets of information, the recruitment packets that we send the beneficiaries, so you can give it to your clients. And there's also the toll-free number that beneficiaries can call to inquire about POD and ask for detailed information. And also, we have a POD website, and that website has all the information that you could ask for on POD. And it also has some tools on it, like a calculator that helps beneficiaries figure out what their offset payment could be under the benefit offset as a way of trying to check to see if this demonstration could benefit them. So with that, I think this would be a good time to ask questions, but if the moderator would leave the information slide up on the screen, I'd also like to introduce to you that Vince Pellegrini and Drew Castleman, as well as Kai Philemon, will also be joining in the question and answer session. So if you hear their voices, don't be surprised.
Great.
So with that, I'll transfer it over to the moderator.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John. Leanne, we are going to open up for a few questions, but I think we do have some questions from the chat.
Yes, we only have one question, and that is, will the POD participation be on the BPQYs like the BOD participants were?
Hi, this is
Vince Pellegrini. Can you confirm that?
Hi, this is Vince Pellegrini. Yes, it should show up on the BPQY.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Leanne, do we have any questions from our participants?
And as a quick reminder, it is star 1 if you would like to ask a question over the phone line. And we have no one in the queue at this time.
Okay, well, thank you so much, John, Kai, and Vince, and Drew. And if any questions come up, we'll be sure to forward that to you. So I'm going to go ahead and go forward and hand this over to Jamie Pendergrass.
Thanks, Adele. Hi, everyone. This is Jamie Pendergrass. I am the Beneficiary Outreach Manager at TPM, and today we're excited to share one of our newest success stories, which is about Amy, The information is on the slide with a link to her success story, and it can be found on the Choose Work website as well under our Success Stories page. And today we're going to be talking about an effective practice with Amy's EN and VR agency. As a way of introduction, we have periodically you might hear from a TPM team member asking you whether you have a ticket program success story to share. And sharing success stories is an opportunity to showcase the great work you do and to publicly celebrate the impact your work has on the lives of your clients. Human interest and testimonial are very powerful marketing tools, and ticket program success stories get wide exposure. We share them on the website, we share them on our social media accounts, and we promote them through other organizations. As I mentioned, today we're going to hear from Eric Schmidt of Maryland Division of Rehabilitation Services, or DOORS, and Karen Stensler from Full Circle Employment Solutions. They're going to talk about their recent experience with developing a success story that celebrated the employment of their client, Amy, who has a developmental disability. Amy's path to employment began when she found the continuum of support she needed before, during, and after she found a job. And Eric and Karen, we're very grateful for you to join us today. If we can move to the next slide. On that slide, Eric and Karen, do you list their contact information in case anyone has questions specific to how Amy's story actually came about? Eric, we're going to start with you. Could you tell us a little bit about how the VR counselor met Amy and the kind of help Amy was looking for and some of the services DOORS provided?
Sure. Thanks, Tammy, and thank you all for the opportunity to have a chance to spend a few minutes on this today. Amy was actually referred to DOORS from a partner agency in the local community, a DDA provider, and she was able to meet really quickly with a DOORS counselor and was found eligible for services based upon her diagnosis and also based upon the fact that she receives disability benefits. So we're able to kind of quickly move folks along if that's the case. On her application, she actually expressed an interest in learning some job readiness skills with a particular interest in finding employment in an office setting. So one of the first things that her counselor did was set up a career assessment to make sure that that was a good goal, clarify some specifics about that goal, if there was any additional supports that were going to be needed, and then develop a customized plan for employment to bring in additional team members for that goal. So one of the first things that was determined was that job coaching was going to be necessary, assistive technology to support communications regarding her tasks and scheduling, and then also, given the fact that she was a disability beneficiary, depending upon the outcome, there was potential for a need for benefits counseling services, which we would regard as necessary for just about everybody. So what actually happened on this particular case was Project Search in Maryland has a number of internship opportunities throughout the state with a variety of state agencies, and one came available in Montgomery County, Maryland, relatively near to Amy's location, and she actually was able to apply for and receive an opportunity to do that internship, which was designed really to help just develop skills and work habits, but Amy did so well in the job that actually at the end of the internship, she was actually offered a full-time position. So DOORS had to provide Amy with attire appropriate for work, the assistive technology that I mentioned, and then also some job coaching ongoing supports until that DOORS case was going to be closed. She continued to receive those job coaching supports, and when it was determined that her work was going to be full-time, she was actually linked with a certified benefits counselor from Full Circle.
Great. Thank you so much, Eric. And you already answered my next question about what happened when her DOORS case was closed. But I do have another question for you. Can you tell us a little bit about the Partnership Plus arrangement DOORS had in Amy's case, and how would you describe the advantages for everyone involved in collaborating with EN to bring clients that ongoing support that they do need?
Sure. So luckily in Maryland, we recognize benefits counseling on its own is a really critical service. And so we have actually almost 40 providers of benefits counseling that we use as a fee-for-service while a case is open. But the really good thing about the situation we have here in Maryland is that many of those benefits counseling providers are also connected with employment networks as well. And that was the case here with Full Circle. So the transition to post-employment was really super easy because the same provider could continue to work with Amy both while her case was open and then after her case was closed. So Doors was able to kind of facilitate that. We have a number of agreements with our Partnership Plus agencies. We've got about 15 Partnership Plus memorandum of understanding that we use to kind of facilitate that coordination, facilitate ticket-to-work collaboration, and then also hand off those services when the Doors case is going to be closed. And there's a lot of advantages to that. I always think of it like a win-win-win for everybody involved. For Amy, she got to basically continue to work with the same team of folks that she'd gotten used to working with, and so that was really seamless, and she had folks that she knew and trusted, and she didn't have to have somebody new at the close of case come on board. Doors was also assured that she'd receive those supports, and we knew that benefits counseling was going to be critical for Amy because she was working full-time, clearly going to be above SGA, and clearly going to be something that's going to be impacting her down the road. For Full Circle, they were able to seamlessly continue their work, and then through the ticket payment system, we know that they'll be compensated for that. And then Doors was actually able to track Amy's progress through Full Circle, you know, make sure we get those wages back in so that Doors could actually get a cost reimbursement when that time came. And that was able to be done really with a lot of help from Full Circle in getting those updated wages for us.
That's great. Thanks so much, Eric. Karen, we're going to switch gears a little bit and chat with you for a minute. Can you tell us about the services you provided after Amy's VR case closed?
Sure. Thanks so much for the invitation today, Jamie. After Amy's VR case closed, Full Circle continued to provide ongoing benefits counseling support to Amy and her family. And we also continued to help monitor her cash benefits. So at the time, she was receiving two different types of benefits from Social Security. And along with that also comes her health coverage for both Medicare and Medicaid. So that was really critical to Amy and her family to making sure that they understood what happens as Amy's employment continued successfully. We also made sure to review the reporting requirements for Social Security, both when somebody receives the Title II and the Title 16 benefits, and how is that earned income relayed back to Social Security to really try to avoid any type of overpayment. We also had a provider partner, SEEK, and they also provided job coaching support in addition to what we were providing as benefits counselors. So they really helped support Amy in having her achieve some flexibility, both in her professional and personal life, helped to really reduce the stress and anxiety, and the job coaching part from SEEK really assisted her that way.
Thanks so much, Karen. You touched on this a little bit, but could you tell me a little more about any concerns Amy or her family might have had about her going to work and how it might affect her benefits?
Sure. So I think one of the largest pieces is really when somebody receives that cash benefit, and making sure that Amy's cash benefit was stopped or suspended at the correct time. So I think anybody working in the field, sometimes the Social Security will continue to overpay, not intentionally, but when a family and especially when Amy knows that she is not entitled to that cash payment, we were really able to assist them in understanding when that cash payment on both sides either should have been reduced or stopped. In addition to that, Amy also was in need of long-term support services. So making sure that her family really understood the concerns about the Medicaid, the continuing of the Medicaid coverage as her SSI benefit stopped as well. So we did help them monitor and understand that health insurance coverage side, which was very helpful to them and really put them at ease as Amy continued to work.
Thanks, Karen. And Amy has been successful at work for a while now. How would you describe the effect that work had on her life?
So it's been a really positive experience for Amy. She continues to build on communication skills, social cues, and really teamwork has been really positive for Amy. She continues to apply these soft skills even outside of her work environment, so even obviously in her socialization with friends and family events. She really does look forward to going to work every day. She has a great relationship with her coworkers, and that has continued as well.
Thanks, Karen. And my last question specifically for you is, why did Full Circle decide to submit Amy's story?
So we had thought that Amy's story showed a great partnership between the state VR agency and a partnership plus EN. Also it shows that, as Eric had mentioned before, Amy was also part of a successful internship project search program. Which led her to that pathway to permanent employment, which she's obviously been very successful at. So these real life testimonies really help show us and put forth our best effort in services we provide under our employment network. So we really hope that every individual like Amy really has that seamless transition from VR to working with an employment network.
Great. Thank you so much, Karen. And Eric, the next one is for you. What do you think success stories and other human interest testimonial can do for your organization's image?
I think it's a really good question for us. As a government agency, a lot of times we're kind of looked at as the checkbook or the facilitator just to link services together. But we recognize that it's really important to engage with the public too. We have a very robust, public mission statement, and storytelling for us is a big way to help overcome some of the misconception about government agencies or our role. And when we do work on success stories like this, we also understand it's really important to in order to get that story out there, it's got to be more than just the written story. We like to include a lot of images. We really try to engage with the person that was the heart of that story. We work with our consumers to make them a part of that process. And one of the neatest things for us is a lot of the counselors that work with our folks directly say that one of the big things once they're successful is they have a conversation with that individual, and that individual wants to know, well, how can I give back? And for us, really, success stories is one of the best way for that individual to give back, because it helps doors be able to put a good face and a good message out there. And with regards to Ticket to Work and Partnership Plus in particular, these are kind of my favorite success stories, because it really is joining together a lot of different service providers, a lot of different supports that we're able to put together as a team that all come together to help a person with a disability find and maintain their job. They go from being, in most cases, either having never been employed or haven't been employed at any time recently, to being active taxpayers. And then obviously there's a big role that can play in supporting our services moving forward. So I guess in a way of conclusion, the most critical thing for us is to demonstrate how folks are personally impacted by services, and the best way to do that is really link with those individuals, help them tell their own story, and just let that show the value of the services that we can provide as an agency.
Thanks, Eric. And could you also tell us a bit about how you shared Amy's success story?
Sure. So we also have a public website and social media. And so the first thing we did was we actually worked with our RPR person and reviewed the Choose Work website story. And then she's actually going to go out and reach back out with Amy to kind of put our own little spin on that success story, specific to some doors kind of questions and answers. So that's kind of an ongoing process for us. But like I said, really for us, we want to have that personal touch when we do a success story. And the critical piece there is getting involvement from the individual. One other big thing that we like to do is we work with our partner agencies, our partner ENs, locally with our local field offices. And I'll actually go around with those partner ENs on a, you know, individual office-to-office level, meeting with the staff there to address questions on how we can engage and facilitate linkage between DOORS and a partner employment network so we can continue those processes. So really, it's a large kind of global scale to reach out to the public at large, but also reaching into our own staff to educate them and provide some support so they understand how critical these kind of processes are.
That's really great to hear. Karen, can you tell us a little bit about how you shared Amy's story?
Sure. Very similar to Eric, we did share on our social media accounts, but we also made sure to share it with our partner provider, and they were able to share that out on their social media as well, along with their staff, and obviously we sent it out to all of our staff as well.
That's great. Thank you both so much for joining and sharing the story of our success story process with the audience. Can we move on to the next slide, please? Oh, I'm sorry, one more. Thank you. So thank you so much, Karen and Eric. And I did just want to add a bit of a conclusion here to put out a bit of a promotion for submitting success stories. So in addition to publishing your story on Social Security's website, we promote success stories through our social media, the Ticket to Work blog, emails, and through other organizations' distribution channels. So that can be a newsletter, a social media post, a variety of different ways. These stories can be used to help you promote your organization and the great work you do to help people find their path to employment, just like Eric and Karen talked about today. If you have one or more clients who have found work and earned their way off of benefits in part because of the help you provided, please do let us know. Send us an email. The address is on your screen, and it is just stories@choosework.ssa.gov. And again, Eric and Karen, I do want to thank you for sharing your experience with us today and for the great work you do for Amy and for the rest of your clients. Okay, I am going to continue on now with our outreach presentation. Next slide, please. And I'm going to do this very quickly because I know I went a bit over time with the interview. We'd like to announce that the Service Provider Outreach Toolkit has moved. It is now on yourtickettowork.ssa.gov under Related Resources. As a reminder, that toolkit contains fact sheets, success stories like Amy's, and other materials that you can share and use on social media or to hand out at your office. It also has program branding materials and many other resources. So I do encourage you to go check out that Service Provider Outreach Toolkit. Next slide, please. We do always have volunteer opportunities in addition to submitting success story leads. We also are always looking for guest bloggers for our Choose Work blog or presenters for a National Work Incentive Seminar event or WISE webinar, as you might hear them referred to more frequently. And if you would like to do either of those, you can contact social media at choosework.ssa.gov. And like I said, we're always looking for bloggers and presenters. Next slide, please. I have provided a list of all of our Choose Work social media accounts. We are on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. I would also encourage you to not only follow these accounts, but also to be sure that you're checking out the new resources that we do promote. And if you would be able to like and share those posts, that would be great as well. And if you ever have ideas for anything you would like to see on our social media, do let us know as well. Next slide, please. We do also have two accounts specific to service providers. We have a Facebook group or a Facebook page for Your Ticket to Work, and we also have a Twitter page for that for Ticket to Work as well. That's where you're going to see some program announcements. You'll see announcements asking you to share information about the WISE webinars, and we do want to encourage you to try and engage on those pages as well. Next slide, please. Okay, actually, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Kara Kaplan from Social Security for some EN updates.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just have a couple quick updates for you guys. I just want to remind you that the annual performance outcome report, the APOR, is due February 28th. All questions should be sent to SSAENAPOR@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And there are some entities that are exempt from the APOR. Those are anyone's with an agreement date in 2017. AJCs, workforces are exempt, and VRs are exempt. And I just want to remind you to please do this timely, because every year we terminate a decent amount of ENs for not sending in their APOR. So after February 28th, if we don't receive it, you may be, your agreement may be terminated. Also, along with that, the security awareness training, it's just really a form that you guys fill out, is due on the 28th. All staff must sign the SSA 222 and keep it on file. And then a representative from your EN, either the signatory authority or the security contact person, can send in the addendum listing with their signature on it and all staff who have completed the form. If you're a one-person entity, you would just send in your 222. We've also updated the TPA change form, which is the SSA 1374. It is posted on yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. It's available in the form section of the information center page. You use it to update your contacts, your location, services you provide, any updates you have to your agreement, and ENs are responsible for letting us know. Often your Social Security specialist will call you and we'll hear, well, that person's no longer here or that's not our address. You should be informing us of those immediately when those changes occur. The certification of services documentation responsibilities. I know this is a newer procedure, and a lot of ENs are a little confused about it. It is also a requirement of your TPA. Responses to services and supports requests are mandatory. If you're not able to meet the deadline, alternate dates can be agreed upon, but just contact them. There are consequences for non-responsiveness. We've sent out several cure notices for this. There have been a couple terminations for not wanting to comply. There will be holds on your payments and your ticket assignments while you're in non-compliant status. Also, documentation, either case notes, tracking system, cost form, that stuff is important. It is key to providing proof of your mandatory quarterly contact with ticket holders, services and supports being provided, and what's listed in your signed IWP. And that is all. I will send it off to Anna now.
Thank you, Kara. Good afternoon, everybody. I just have a quick reminder about the Service Provider Foundation's training that we have available for all of you. It is mandatory for new point of contacts at each organization, especially when they change. The EN key contacts responsible for the TPA ticket holders, payments, and TPA inquiries. And of course, the brand new ENs that we receive. This training needs to be completed within 60 days of the TPA agreement. And anybody that would like to request this training, they can email enservice@ssa.gov, and they will send a request to EN Development Department, and we will schedule your trainings at your convenience. And for more information, you can go to yourtickettowork.ssa.gov website, and we have a list of the different modules. We have so far 14 modules available for you to take advantage for your staff. And with that, I will send it back to Adele to open it up for questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Anna.
Yes, Leanne, we will open up for questions, but we do have a few from the chat. If you can help me out with that, John.
Hi, yes, we have two questions, and I just answered one from Melissa, but I'm going to go ahead and read it over the phone because I'm sure other people will benefit from this. So Melissa Gard asked, we turned in our security awareness form according to their old schedule in January, and she wanted to know if they needed to resubmit.
You turned it in January?
Correct.
I mean, technically, yes, you should resubmit, but probably if you turned it in this year, we will accept that.
All right. And then our next question comes from Pamela Cross, who asks, what are the deadline dates for the certification of services?
I can answer that. There's not a deadline date. When Maximus reaches out to you, and Maximus is representing Social Security, when they reach out to you that they need a COS or an IWP from your agency, you have 9 business days to follow up with them. Okay, very good. John, anything else in the chat? I don't think so. I don't think I saw too much going on there.
Nope.
Okay. Leanne, if you can see if there's any questions from our participants.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone line, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And that is *1 if you have a question. And we have had a question queue up. Our next question comes from Marja Reeve with Melwood.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. I have a question about the addendum page, the SSA 222 addendum. So every person, so there's like myself and 12 staff members, on that form we need to list every staff member, and then individually they need to sign the SS 222 and place it in our security office.
Right. Everyone would put the name down of every person in your office that works on the ticket program, and you would keep their 222s on file. And it's not to say we wouldn't ask for them at some point, or we do a site visit,
right.
We may ask for them. But, yeah, we're trying to make it a little easier on you guys. So you would just send in that form with their names and keep the 222s on file.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And also, just to clarify, with the security contact or the signatory authority signing it, they're certifying that they have all of those on file.
Okay. All right. And it should be sent to enservice@ssa.gov?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we do have another question over the phone line. The next question comes from Sherry McDonald with Reach.
Hi, I was just curious, how do I change the staff members on the EN that are no longer with us or are no longer working on the EN? Is that just is it a change form, or do I have to submit a form 1374 and put that information in there?
The 1374 is the change form.
For staff and everything, so you just fill that all out.
And you, I would do that. You can also send an email to EN Service or your EN Service specialist. You don't necessarily have to use the form. The form just makes it a little bit easier on us.
Roger that. Great, thanks.
And our next question comes from Odell Tiller with Orange Grove Center.
Hi. Thank you. Hi. I first like to thank Vernon Collins for calling me and getting me back on the right track for suitability. I really appreciate all the help that he gave me. My question is, the staff that's going through suitability, are they permitted to assist the staff that have clearance already? Sandy and work with the beneficiaries?
The staff that has suitability clearance are good to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
people who have not been cleared should not be working with the beneficiaries.
Okay, all right. Thank you much. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
And as a reminder, that is star one to ask a question. And we do have a question from Pamela Cross with Central Arkansas Disability Services.
Good evening, everyone. I did put it in the chat, but I thought I probably needed to say it. We have probably about 15 people that work in our office, but maybe three individuals work on the ticket to work who's been thoroughly trained. However, we have locked files, and sometimes those files may have something else in it. And so I thought it was best that I would do have them do the training for security suitability. I allowed them to all go through the training and do the suitability application. So if you come across that file, even though you don't work on it, it would still give us that clearance. Do you all have a problem or see a problem with that?
No, I thought that was really good. Better safe than sorry.
Exactly. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I'm not doing an overkill here.
Never too much.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question comes from Ann Austin with Laridon.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
My question is about the new suitability process. When I send an email to ensfa.gov, I can password protect, my employees' personal information because those emails contain a lot of the PII for our employees. Is there a way to password protect the documents going to, I forget the email, for suitability?
Yeah, just the suitability office?
Yes.
I don't know. They've actually left the room, but they never said anything about it being password protected. That is a good point.
Okay.
Well,
we can take that question, Ann, and I will ask them and get back to everyone with that question by posting it with all the other information.
But just, anything that has PII that's coming into the agency or just anything you send really should be protected. I mean.
Exactly, but I'm wondering how to do it with the other agency.
Yeah. Well, you can send them in a separate email the password.
Sure. Okay. I just didn't want them to get all confused.
We will get it clarified, but that would be my advice, but I don't work in that office.
Okay, thank you.
And as a quick reminder, that is star one to ask a question.
John, meanwhile, did you have anything come up in the chat?
It looks like we've answered all of the questions that have come up in the chat.
Awesome. Leanne, I'm sorry. I think you said you were going to say someone was queued up?
Someone has queued up. The next question comes from Wandia Albury with Walton Options.
Hi, this is Wandia again, trying to get clarity for the changes regarding suitability in the process with the fingerprinting. Did you all say that an email blast will go out?
Yes, it'll be posted on the Maximus website and an email blast will go out.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
And that is star one to ask a question. And we have no further questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today and for your participation. This is just a reminder, our next call will be on May 17th, same time, 3 o'clock to 4:30. Thanks again, and have a great rest of the day.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.